Hey everybody, happy Thursday.
Hello. Happy pre-snowstorm.
Indeed.
All queued up for Arctic weather tomorrow.
They're for sure going to be cool here in Eastern Michigan because the wind chill might be like minus or something.
Yep.
Michigan
So,
wasn't supposed to get the snow.
oh, we have, according to the top of my trash can, about 6 inches.
Oh.
Yep. One of my staffs lives in Southwest Michigan and said that her overnight the winds just like completely drift, snow drifted over her driveway.
Oh, now, not the one that's coming this weekend.
Right. We've been
Yeah,
getting
our
steady
forecast
snow all
here.
week.
Oh, wow, okay.
That's because you're on that side of Lake Michigan. Yep. We don't get nearly enough lake effect snow.
Our forecast here in central Ohio has been bouncing between 1 to 2 inches and 12 to 14. So we don't know.
Yep. Fun thing about changing climate, models are
Yeah.
less reliable.
And that's yes.
And of course, we're trying to predict the wind, so
We just need to get back to measuring inchworms and watching cows' behavior and the whole groundhog thing.
Oh, yeah. Was it the old Farmer's Almanac that was finally discontinued?
Yeah, so I was homeschooled, and when my mom went to teach me meteorology, she definitely bought a book from like the 1800s called like the I think it was like something Sloan Weather Guide or something like that, and it was just filled with all these like very dubious methods of determining whether or not it's going to rain or whatever.
I still look
Nice.
at woolly bears.
And I think Old Farmer's Almanac is still published. So since 1792. So that's a long
That's a
publication
good
history.
run.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now you're making me think of cereals.
We have an almanac collection. Yeah.
My daughter is going to school at grad school at Penn State. And so she made a side trip to Punxsutawney and met Phil.
Nice. All right. That's a must do in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, she said I asked her if she asked Phil what the weather was going to be like, and she said no, she was too awestruck.
Well, also, he's a professional and he's not supposed to reveal that for another week or
Nah.
two. Yeah.
Yeah. Still calculating.
Oh my gosh, Autumn, thank you so much. Because that should be our first agenda topic is finding a note taker for today. All right, we are 5 minutes past the hour, the top of the hour. Welcome everyone to a working meeting of the Tri-Council. This has been we forecast this in the fall and at WolfCon with using this as an opportunity to do a roundup and a survey of all of the progress on initiatives that had been raised in Kansas City and discussions a little bit before and discussions have ensued. So there is, with great thanks to Caitlin for pulling together a deck where we could anchor all these conversations. Here's a deck that we'll be using today. I am not going to share my screen because my computer will freeze up. If we can start with the first presenter, they can share their screen and we can pop around. But if you go to the second page, the agenda slide that in Zoom chat that I've just shared, we did have fulsome conversations at WolfCon. Each of the councils, as a tri-council, each of the councils then met individually. There's a link to the tri-council page there if you'd like to refresh your memory. Some of the initiatives have morphed from their initial discussion or conception at tri-council. So instead of going line by line through each of the items in the notes page, we're going to get updates on current initiatives. Thank you, Caitlin. From representatives of each of the three councils. And I think, given the time, we should probably, if there are questions, comments, clarifications, or discussions, we should do them as we go rather than saving them for the end. Though if things do get, it seems like we're going down a rabbit hole, we can always say, let's put that in a pin for the end of this meeting or for a follow-up discussion. So, without further ado, why don't we go to Technical Council? Oh, sorry. That was a slide that had a copy paste, but we're not going to work through that. That's just for reference from what was said and captured at the Tri-Council meeting. So, the next one is why don't we go to Technical Council?
Thank you. And full disclosure that I wrote these this morning, so other folks from TC feel free to chime in if I got anything wrong. I had the flu this month and everything just kind of got away from me. It wasn't fun. So there's a little bit of a mix here between things that came up at WolfCon and just initiatives that were kind of developed in TC. So this isn't strictly WolfCon, but I wanted it to be clear what we were spending time on. So one of the internal TC goals had been to establish a review of previously accepted modules, because right now we kind of accept something and then it's just good forever. And there are also some modules that came in before the review process had started that are that old. So we wanted to establish that. We still had a lot of, not a lot, we had some lingering licensing questions that were just tripping people up. So it was really a priority to get those taken care of so that module reviews could go smoothly. As part of the WolfCon goals, we wanted to provide support to the community-directed development efforts. And for us, what was listed when I looked at the TC thing were working on cost estimates, like around how much does it cost to support a module? And then also this sort of persistent question about core. We have been less active with the CDD stuff since the holidays. So we're going to work with Jeremy to kind of plug back in there. And it's a little easier for TC to deal with like specific tasks. So we'll work together and figure out some like specific things that we can actually turn into a to-do list. And that's a little easier to work with in TC. And then the other thing that had come up in our WolfCon discussion, sort of separate, was trying to improve the WolfCon developer experience. And now that it's January, I guess it's time for us to actually think about that because WolfCon is going to be coming up quickly. And this was just in terms of, well, I don't know. I don't want to say what it's in terms of, whether it's like a developer track or more room for developers to talk to each other. But like there was just some sense that it would be nice for there to be some piece of WolfCon that was focused on teams, perhaps. So, but that's more to think about. So next slide. So these are just our updates on those. So the licensing subgroup did it, led by Maccabee, did like an amazing job. And they really got their work done. Alameda built, I was struggling over whether to call it an app or a script or what, but it's a process for checking licenses with automation. And that's kind of in a testing phase right now. You may have seen on Slack, there's some discussion about that. So they're working on that, but really like tremendous work in that group. We've been working through the knock-on effects of the Trillium delay. So this isn't like a long-term goal thing, but it's like a thing that had to happen. Julian spearheaded this discussion of support periods and how we calculate them. And presented and got approved a new method for working through those that actually relies on the the support periods of the underlying technology and doesn't just kind of hand wave. We're continuing to do module approvals. Right now, we have two of those existing module approvals in process. We're staying in touch with the Eureka adopters. We're not super active at this, but Craig does come regularly and give us updates, so we're keeping an eye on it. I'm participating in the metrics working group, some of which might help us feed into the whole community driven development stuff, but we haven't started working on that specific CDD input from TC yet, and we haven't really started on the WolfCon brainstorming yet. That might be, we have that on our list. And sorry, Alameda, Kevin, and Peter as well on licensing. It was really an amazing group, so they deserve a lot of thanks. Yeah, so that's kind of where we are. Obviously, plenty more work to do. That's it.
I can jump in for the PC. Caitlin, that was our plan, right? That I would do this part? Okay.
It was, yep.
All right. Well, I'm Jeremy Huff with the Product Council. And last year at WolfCon, during our shoulder meeting, the PC surfaced the following goals, kind of overarching goals for the PC in the coming year. And one was to invest in the prioritization dashboard, which is a dashboard that we have created in Atlassian. The goal there being to pull all of the SIGs and get them to surface their top five priorities from the perspective of their SIG, which kind of gives us, you know, a one-shot look at, like, across the community what is being prioritized, which is really cool. And then from there, for the PC to be able to kind of surface a top five of top fives, you know, and it's a attempt for us to shine a spotlight on the things that the community is wanting to see for the product. Another thing that we were really interested in is looking at how we can get a lightweight kind of minimally viable product for the DIP process, which is Development Initiative Proposal. This was initially proposed last spring, and it was also a part of the CDDF framework, and it seemed to be one of the parts that people felt was maybe like a low hanging fruit or something along those lines. And so there was definitely an interest in us, you know, maybe beginning there. So that was a goal that we had. And then also we wanted to explore the ways that we communicate releases to the community and that process. And specifically, also the relationship between the PC and the RMS group. So these were the goals that we expressed. Next slide, please. And in order to address those goals, the PC has decided to create three different working groups. So we have a community priorities dashboard working group. The DIP process was taken on by an existing Tri-Council working group that has kind of turned into a PC working group. That was the Community Directed Development Framework working group, but we have prioritized the minimally viable DIP as our first deliverable. So that group is working on that. And then also an RMS PC roles, relations, and communications working group. So what we're going to do from here is each one of these groups is going to give a quick update on their goals and milestones, and that'll kind of serve as an overview for what we're engaged in. And I believe community priorities is the first one. First slide. Okay, cool. So I'm going to hand it off to the convener of that group.
So I'll give it a start. So I had started convening this group when the government shutdown was happening, and Caitlin was not available. But so we're sort of tag teaming at this point. But so the Product Council subgroup on the Community Priorities Dashboard, we're trying to build processes around the dashboard. The dashboard is up on the wiki. It's there for everybody to look at. The SIGs have done a great job populating it. What we need to do now is sort of build processes around maintaining it. We need to create documentation and set a cadence for updating the dashboard, and then figure out how the PC is going to use it going forward. So I linked to the dashboard, I linked to our charter. The folks on this group are myself, Caitlin, Todd Olson, Lisa McCullough, and Autumn Faulkner. And we've kind of we wrote our charter. We discussed it with the PC. We got feedback, and basically at this point, we've divided ourselves into two subgroups of the working group. One that's working on documentation, best practices, and a communication plan to work with the SIGs and the POs, and eventually create a designated role within the PC to manage this, because it's the sort of thing that somebody needs to be on top of all the time. And if we don't have somebody who is responsible, one or more people who are responsible for doing that, we're just sort of it's going to fall through the cracks. I mean, it's inevitable. So we want to set up a make a little job description for that, and have a nice process around all of the updating and communication that needs to happen. So Lisa, Autumn, and I are working on that part. And then Caitlin and Todd are working on figuring out this idea of creating this PC ranked list, this larger, this based on what the SIGs have said are their top five priorities. What's the list for the larger product at the PC level, at this higher level? And Caitlin, I don't know if you want to say anything more about that, but that's a process as well.
Thank you so much, Alexis. Full disclosure, Todd and I have not met yet, but we do have kind of a stated goal to work on this as we move into the spring. You might remember from early discussions about the community priorities dashboard that we kind of had two phases in mind. The first was to surface the SIG priorities to a dashboard so people could see them and be aware of them and know what the top five were. And then the next phase was this idea that the PC would create a single ranked list. And we have, treated this like an experiment from the beginning. We have learned a lot. And I think one of the things we learned, both from internal review and talking to folks like the product owners and even some of the SIGs, is that getting from the dashboard and the very granular features that are surfaced there to a single ranked list is difficult. The kind of the level of detail, the granularity of the dashboard puts you in a situation where, you're evaluating really specific features that might not, be apples to oranges. Who's to say one person's email and invoice is more important than or valuable than ordering item records or something like that? And I'm thinking specifically of a conversation that we had with the POs about what would be most useful to them. And the feedback that we got is that we really need to roll this up a level and kind of talk about the larger investment needs, the areas that we need to be focusing resources on. So we're thinking that we would review the dashboard, come up with just like a draft, a straw man list of needs that the PC could rank and prioritize, and see what happens, see what we learn from that. We'll keep you updated as that moves forward. And just like the dashboard, we're going to kind of do it iteratively and see what works, see what doesn't, and what's most useful before moving forward. I'm the last person on this slide, so I'll transition to the next one, which I think takes us to Autumn's group. No. Jeff
No,
or
that'd be
Jeremy.
me.
Yeah, thank you.
So I'm convening the community directed development subgroup, and for our update, I decided to put our list of deliverables from our charter that we decided on in the subgroup, which will kind of give an overview of our ambitions and kind of the time frame of those. I will have a lot more to say about things, the bullet points that come first in this list, because it's the stuff we're working on currently, and much less to say about things as I move down the list. But also, some of these dates have scooted around based on some scheduling changes in the PC. So, like for instance, the February 26th date is probably going to fall in March, actually, but we are initially hoping within the next month. To or so to deliver to the PC a documented process for a minimally viable DIP. So we're going to bring it to them initially to just get some feedback from the wider group. The way that we're going about doing this is that we're taking the initial DIP proposal, which was a lot more minimally viable, and comparing it to the one that was included in the CDDF documentation, which was changed significantly to take into account some of the other aspects of the CDDF. And so we're doing a comparison of those two to see which aspects we want to keep, which ones we might want to roll back to the more simple version. And then after we get that, we might look to see if there's any unique and new improvements that could be made to the concept to maybe make it more viable. And then that's what we're going to bring to the PC for some feedback. We also want to look into and continue. This is part of the community directed development initiative. Pursue the idea of a community development team, and we would like to interface with the CC on that. So, CC, hi. We hope sometime in March to maybe see if we could get with y'all and talk about some ideas regarding community development teams. We're looking into delivering a documented process for designating Folio components as community or participating, which was part of the CDDF process. We want to bring that to the PC. So this was one of the major roles that the PC was going to play within the CDDF. And we want to explore what that would look like from a practical level. We also are very interested in seeing how a mature and more than minimally viable DIP process can be rolled out and kind of have a plan for what that might look like that we would like to deliver to the PC in May, along with at the close of the group, a more comprehensive roadmap for the rollout of the complete CDDF in June, which would be the termination of this group. And all of this we hope to put something together to talk about at WolfCon. So that is, oh, one thing that's not here that we are definitely interested in. I've reached out to Jen and Stephen in the CC, but if there are any initiatives in the other councils regarding the community directed development framework, we are very interested in our group having some sort of communication touch point with initiatives happening in the other councils. So we would like to invite folks in the other councils who are working on things related to community directed development to explore maybe having a common meeting once a month where we all get together and share what is happening in each one of the other councils. I think that that would be a really good way to continue moving the ball forward in each individual council, but make sure that our efforts are being coordinated in some way. So definitely reach out to me if you are working on community directed development stuff in either the TC or the PC, and you are interested in coordinating that work. I'm done.
Thanks, Jeremy. I think Autumn, are you doing the slide? I know you're also taking notes, so
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
okay.
It's okay. Thank you for reminding me. Keeping the recording participants. Oh, it's a note
No.
taking. I will, these notes are going to be spotty, FYI. I'm taking a transcript. I'll fill in gaps afterwards, but it's really nice to have the slide deck. Glad for that. We're okay with linking to the slide deck from the meeting notes page, I assume.
Absolutely.
Okay, and I see I have been remiss and I didn't get a link in here either to our working group charter. I'll take care of that. But our focus here is, as Jeremy mentioned, the overall PC update is to better understand the relationship between product council and folks working on the release management process. And kind of, acknowledging maybe a shortfall here where PC can be a little more engaged with that process. So we're going to chat with Crinkle, start collaborating with the folks in RMS to make sure that we're, active in appropriate ways in that process. And yeah, this is kind of a two-pronged effort. So we also want to ensure that the audience of regular library workers who are not super involved with Slack or SIGs or the development process, like folks on my team at MSU, can get an update about a software release that is free, accessible, and in person. That's been identified as type of communication that would be appreciated by a lot of folks in the community. So that seems like a great way for PC to support the overarching process of new releases. So our group is focusing initially on this communication piece. We've actually POs who have been thinking along the same track and have actually begun producing notes on functionality, which look really nice. So we are working with them to kind of support the creation of that content. And then I think we are going to recommend that PC have a permanent role in sharing that stuff out in the appropriate venues. So that's been our a lot of our recent discussion. And then also we're just wanting to establish a good understanding of all the release management processes, like an environmental scan, make sure we understand what's happening, what's the current state of things, operations. And then at the end of all of this, we hope to have this all documented. Again, documentation, communication, that kind of stuff seems to be a theme across all of these groups. I think we're aiming for a May, June timeline here for our deliverables. Other group members, have I gotten everything? Anybody want to add anything?
I would just underscore that the work that the POs were already starting to do along the same directions was really quite heartening. I was really, really impressed. And they seem to be happy to work with us. So that's all fantastic.
Yeah, I can jump back in. I just threw the slide in mere moments before this meeting. So, PC members, if y'all disagree with any of these things, tell me, Jeremy, you're out of your mind. But these seem to be some other topics that come up a lot and seem like worth mentioning in this wider venue, that are initiatives that the PC seems to be engaging in. One is that we're exploring a calendar calming, which is the last week of every month. We are canceling any PC-driven meetings and encouraging the folks that are, do work related to the PC work to do the same, to give everybody a week in the month where they can catch up on actually doing the things that we've been talking about doing in all the other meetings in the month. And so we're given that a 3-month trial, I believe. And I gotta say, I was looking at my calendar, and next week is the calming week, the first one, and it is pretty empty looking. And it's hard to express the level of excitement I felt when I saw that. I mean, I love hanging out with you guys, but next week's gonna be awesome. Another thing that we're looking at changing is we are looking at, instead of doing large SIG updates all at the same time. We're looking at getting thank you, Tom. If you want to meet, go for it. We're looking at getting the SIGs on a rolling schedule, so that the updates from the SIGs happen incrementally over time and more consistently. So that's another change. And then we also are very interested. This touches on some of the communication topics that have come up, and just improving communication and the dissemination of information. But we are definitely interested in some sort of standardized communication at a regular cadence, heading out from the Folio governance to kind of update on what's happening in the community. So something like a newsletter or something like that. There have been things like this in the past. So we have been exploring just that topic, what that would look like, and how we can get that going. And I think that does it for the PC, unless anybody has anything else. Cool. That's what we're doing.
Okay. For the community council, there are a handful of interrelated initiatives. There's actually line item contributions to talk about first, ongoing discussions about membership value and membership value proposition, which will lead to a prospective look at a membership drive for 2027. Caitlin, could you, I think, could you drop the slide, or could you drop the share and then refresh, or just refresh the page? Because there are some updates, I think, since you loaded into sharing.
And then
Yeah.
lost my place. Here we go. This is where we were, right?
Thank you. Yeah, perfect. So the perfect. So it's actually, so we'll. This is the order of the items, which I've just referenced, all but one additional one, which is counting things. So the next slide describes the line items contribution, also known as the pass-through proposal initiative. This was a model that was developed after the 2025 summit in Washington, D.C. The idea is that hosted service providers would attach an optional item on the invoices to their customers who may or may not be Folio members. And those customers would transfer funding to the Folio community to help underwrite critical community operations. There was a final draft circulated to all the players in the second half of last year. And at this point, there is not consensus among the hosted service providers to proceed with this idea. I do not, I, it may still revive in the future. And my understanding is that more clarity on the big picture about how funding flows across the community and what this type of funding, how it would be allocated, may help cement it in the future. But at this point, it was a promising initiative from last year, and unfortunately, I think it's at this point dormant. So this leads to the next item. Which is membership value. I believe one of the things that we as a tri-council and we as a community have agreed on is that it's really important to expand Folio membership for lots of reasons. It gets more people contributing to the community. It also brings in more resources so the community can do more things. One of the quips that came out of meetings at Kansas City is right now there's not really there's a value proposition for some institutions, especially those that are interested in governance. But right now, the differentiation in membership levels is the size of your logo on the website. We could do better than that. Through several discussions within the community council since Kansas City, we have brainstormed a list of maybe 13, 14 kind of blue sky options. And four emerged as the ones that seemed most promising within the discussions. So one is if there were an opportunity to influence development that would be attractive to many institutions. This, of course, comes with a caution, is that the community right now is not funding and is not really directing development, and goes hand in hand with some initiatives that Jeremy and the product council have described. So if we can build up a war chest, and if we can community source funding to do development, or resourcing to do development, this is an area where we could possibly do some development. The next two, I think, are linked: technical expertise and access to technical expertise. The folio members institutions have a wealth of practical knowledge about how to use the system and apply it to their workflows. Right, it's vibrant in Slack in particular, in various online meetings, including the SIG meetings, and in face-to-face meetings. If we could somehow channel that into being a formal benefit for membership, that might be a strong drive, regardless of where your system is hosted. Coupled with that is specialized troubleshooting support on individual instances might be helpful. Sean Nicholson, this was a quote from him during one of the brainstorming, is the data curation network in the United States might be a rough analog of people borrowing expertise from other institutions. And the last item that came up is training materials and training resources. There's obviously, when people do implementation, there's a set of questions about how do I use the system? How do I get it up and running? That might be attractive, but even more attractive could be ongoing training for new staff once you're up and running, or training on the latest and the greatest features. So this is an idea that is still there, but is waiting to be fleshed out from a group to be defined or to come into being. That leads into a related topic, which, if Caitlin advances one slide, is the counting things. So another initiative, and Jen did not put this really is across councils. And Jen Colt could have easily put this in kind of TC, because she's been convening a group, which has also included me, Christy, and Sean Nicholson, about trying to do more instrumentation of the Folio community and Folio software. Under the adage is, if you don't measure it, you can't manage it. So there is a brief paragraph describing what the goals of this effort are that can be used to inform us collectively as a community, the shape of participation, the shape of the software and the services around Folio. This group really kicked into gear after at the summit, and immediately after the summit has had several meetings, and we're beginning to emerge with a proto dashboard and beginning to send out requests to other experts and groups across the community to see if what metrics we can capture and which metrics are the most important ones that might guide our development. And then I think the final slide is really a more perspective one, which is looking forward. We're now in the second half of our fiscal year. And one of the things that the Community Council is most concerned about is membership. So to strengthen and grow the community, we're going to need to tie up the membership value discussions. Is there anything among the top four priorities that we can develop? Are there other ideas that we can develop? Or can we simply go back and rearticulate the current reasons to participate in the community? There's been discussion, and we'll need to formally revisit this, is do we have the right tiers? When this was originally created, when the community was formulated, there was a lot of guessing. We have more information now. Maybe there's an opportunity to revise those. And then the last item would be a membership campaign to do proactive outreach to lots of adopters. There's north of 200, I think it's close to 300 Folio adopter institutions across the world. A relatively small percentage are actually formal members at this point, and they need to hear from us and why it would be a good idea to join in. That is the last CC update, though. For other members of CC who may be on the call, or for those who've been involved in any of the initiatives I've described, It'd be great if you would like to jump in and confirm, color, or correct anything I've said. Okay, not hearing anything. There is opportunity, if Caitlin advances one more slide, to, I think, discussion. And so, is there general question and answers? Are any initiatives missing, et cetera, et cetera? And Jeremy, as is often the case, is first off the blocks.
So I guess this is more of an observation, but I'll try to frame it as a question so it fits in here. But given that the pass-through funding initiative is going dormant, and also given that it seems like one of the major hurdles that was brought up often in regards to getting the CDDF up and running is the idea of like funding being in place. And that you mentioned the fact that one of the things maybe holding back the pass-through funding was a structured view of how these resources would be spent. I'm feeling a real chicken and the egg kind of situation here, right? Because if all the structure that we need to get things up and running is being held up on a lack of funding, but the funding is being held up on a lack of structure. So I just feel like that's something we should be aware of and maybe strategically think of how we can address that. And to make this a question, I'm just going to say, what do you guys think about that?
Hurtful. Harry, you've jumped right into.
Exactly. Thanks. Hello, everyone. So I suppose I don't actually understand really why the community-directed development is reliant upon funding anyway. It seems to me there are a significant number of libraries involved in this project. A decent number of them do have development resources. We used to have a community development team called Prokoprovich that was made up of developer contributions from within the community. I guess I don't fully understand why we couldn't go forward with that, at least initially.
Yeah, and I suppose Harry, part of the motivation of my question was, trying to think strategically and specifically the way that you're doing, and what you, the observation that you just posed was that, if there's a way forward for community directed development that doesn't, I do know that people. That one of the objections that did come up a lot is like, how can we do this stuff if the money's not there? But I agree with you that I think there are many ways forward that m might allow us to demonstrate a structured approach to community development without a huge increase in funding, and then maybe if we prove responsible with the resources that we do have, it might lead to a situation where we end up with more resources.
I think it might be worthwhile if at some point maybe a retrospective was done for the folks that are still around that still remember, to find out what happened to the community team. But from what I recall, part of it could be process. Part of it could be how their work was managed. And so, I suppose I find myself wondering, if anything, it'd be worthwhile to go back and take a look and see what happened. And so we can apply those learnings, right, moving forward. But then also, assuming community-directed development resolves, a number of issues that were faced there, maybe we're in a good position, to go back to libraries again and let's see if, we can recruit developer help to get the work done.
Yeah, in the subgroup that the PC is running on community directed development, we have time set aside specifically to look at the idea of a community development team, and we definitely would be enthusiastic in bringing lots of voices into that conversation to see what that might look like, but yeah, I'm I'm inclined to agree with you on all accounts, Harry, that it would be useful to look at what happened the last time around with this and how any future plans for this sort of thing could maybe benefit from lessons learned.
So that last comment is not correct at all that
No,
I
no.
see there. I'm sorry, Charlotte. And also I'm not trying to say that libraries are in a great position today. But I don't think libraries were in a great position, previously either. And what we're proposing relies on raising funding and from libraries, possibly additional funding. And so maybe, instead of funding, people can step forward with maybe in-kind development and resourcing, right?
There was, I mean, I don't know how much we want to get into the details here and now, but yeah, there was, as Kristen mentions, there was grant funding behind a lot of the development resources in the initial in the initial community development team. And then when the resources that were not being funded by grant were, as you mentioned, Harry, in kind. So, for instance, t Texas A&M was our contribution to the development team was an in-kind contribution.
Yeah, I know Michigan State did as well. And I think there were several others. But yeah, I don't know. It's, another path forward. I'm done. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, thanks, Harry. Sorry to step on you. Caitlin?
Thank you. There were two questions that these comments brought up for me. One was, if I remember correctly, and it's been a while, Jeremy and I work closely together, but I haven't looked at the CDD stuff really since WolfCon, so things might have changed. But two ideas that I remember being kind of like in tension with each other that are related to what we're talking about here were on one side, a desire to be able to address kind of the maintenance issues, like how do we pay vendors to do work that needs to be done? And I remember there being kind of a desire through the mechanism of the CDD to channel funding to vendors to get some of that done. On the other hand, I think there were a lot of really big questions about the infrastructure and administrative overhead it would take to get that done. So, like on one hand, Harry, I agree in some ways. I think it would be much lower overhead to get a community development team together. On the other hand, I still feel worried about maintenance. So I don't really have anything constructive to contribute except I think we should keep those in our sights when we're having these conversations.
And I will thank you, Caitlin. I will just jump in with a comment, which is I think Jeremy, your comment about chicken or egg is a really good one. I think if there were, we don't necessarily need the funding to come up with a structure. And in fact, I think having a structure, a blueprint, you have a blueprint before you build a building. If we have a blueprint, and especially if it's a super sexy artists or architectural renditioning with like futuristic people walking with, in the building yet to be built. That could really help. I think the big question is this conversation is very similar to ones we've had over the years, which is there's lots of ways to structure it. I'm not sure we've ever come together. If we had a compelling structure that we think would work, that would be great. I'm not sure. Maybe we have too many ideas, but we don't have a single idea. And it's hard to say, well, here's 19 ways it could kind of work. So the other thing I'm hearing in the conversation you and Harry are having, one might be there's two pathways and they're not mutually exclusive. One pathway was could we crowdsource development from institutional resources? The other is can we raise funds? And as Caitlin is saying, is then contract out work. We probably need to do, but we're already doing both as a community. If you look in the most expansive way, we should, in my mind, develop both pathways forward because there's a lot of talent in our individual institutions, but we also know that that's not for a project of this size. I don't think you can do everything just through bits and pieces of partial contributions.
I'm just
And
going to throw out
Chris.
a little plug that said to say that the CDDF does account for both modes. It does include both approaches.
Right. Kristen.
Yeah, I do remember when we had say directly contributed resources from different institutions, there were complaints, honestly, from some of the full-time project level people that like the rotating in and out of the institutional resources or the part-time institutional resources was not effective or efficient. It was great, I think, for the institution to understand more about folio, but I just, so we don't repeat history necessarily. That had come up when I was on the resource management stakeholders group that, having, not to put Texas A&M on the spot, but that did come up, like having the three people from Texas A&M that contributed time, maybe it all made one FTE, but it didn't end up being as effective as an FTE person. I also think that this conversation around the priorities and the community-directed development, those two things can intersect too. And so if there is, opportunity to identify priorities that are across the board important, and then it can become a community-directed development, we can do funding. It doesn't necessarily have to just be the big, well-resourced universities that are, maybe not feeling so well-resourced at the moment, but if many hands can help make contributions to that, and we can rely on people that have the expertise already, that could be a good way to maybe bring those two things together. I don't know that we could get something else like the major grant. I think that was Mellon Foundation. I think that really provided stability early on in the project and really made us have to report on what happened. It held us accountable. I mean, there were a lot of ways where, the grant added infrastructure and overhead, but that infrastructure and overhead also gave a framework for moving forward, and it made us think about things. And so if we can maybe provide some of that, I mean, I know what you're saying, it's extra work, but I think it still could be the right direction to go.
Top. Thanks, Kristen.
So there are a couple points. One sort of underscoring what Kristen said, the ramp up for a new person to be able to develop in Folio is significant. It's a significant learning curve. And I always had, this is a bit speculative, but I always had the impression that one of the challenges with keeping community engagement with Prokopovich was that not only do you tie up a developer for a period of time, but also the for an institution contributing to ongoing maintenance may not be as appealing as new feature work. So I think that's just the challenge we're going to have. I did want to make a side comment on the value proposition, because a number of the things that we're talking about for raising value are effectively putting some things behind a paywall. And so then the question becomes, what are the things that we're actually comfortable with putting behind a paywall? So that's not really questions, but a couple of things to flag.
Thanks, Todd. Jen?
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on the maintenance thing. Until Caitlin said that, I had kind of forgotten that we'd been talking about that too. But and along the lines of what Todd was just saying, sparkly new features are attractive, right? And sort of easier to define and say, here's what you're getting for your money. And so maybe it makes sense for, when universities decide they want something like, the new serials stuff, to gather that money and fund that initial development. But maybe where the community needs to come in is the backup for the maintenance of that work for hire, so that as new stuff comes in, we've got maintenance infrastructure to take care of it. And that boring funding is where the community infrastructure really has to come in, because it is less exciting. Like, we have to build the foundation and just trust other people to fund when they want something new.
Thanks, Jen. Charlotte, you have your hand up.
Yeah, so I think the Folio project is a more mature place today than when we eventually put down Pukavu, which when it was dissolved as a development team, there was 1.5 developer back and a PO with and assigned with, I don't know, 10, 25% of work time. So it and a rather large backlog of work still responsible for. And it was impossible to continue that that work. So and there was a lot of circumstances and I so and but I will say to you, Harry, maybe it's not that interesting to dig back and see, okay, which developers did we start out with, which didn't we, did we lose during the journey, etc. I think it is relevant to focus on the need, focus on the work the PC has done together with the six for prioritization. And I say I really liked that bullet point you had, Tom, where you said it can make more new libraries interested in being members if they actually can see there will be a realistic turnaround, that they have some requirements and they can see, okay, we probably can get that developed in, I don't know, 12, 18 months or something. So I think the idea about the CDD really can fit in and solve several of the things we have mentioned in this meeting.
Thanks, Charlotte. There's a couple of comments in chat that I just want to call out. Christopher has corrected my statement that the pass-through proposal is dormant. I think it, from his statement, is still percolating, but it is not a simple matter. So thank you, Christopher. I don't know if you want to, I don't know if you want to say anything live on that.
No, just basically that the conversation continues to move from finance to PM to sales to finance to PM to sales. You.
And Peter has talked about archive space, which is one of the things that's come up in the community council discussions about how to that the, where do you put a paywall, and how do you incentivize members to join for a membership? So, and there's been maybe a good example there that we might follow, especially in terms of how to use the system. Okay, we have 1 minute remaining in this hour. There is, I will remind people, I think there's some really good discussion and continuing on some familiar themes as well as some fresh perspective. There is a Tri-Council Slack channel, and if it's not obvious where further commentary should go, like to a particular person or a council, I suggest we make use of that. All right. Well, thank you, Product Council, for allowing us your time. Caitlin, for creating the slide deck and driving the slides, and to everyone who contributed information and discussion.
Bye, folks.
Thanks.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.